Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Total Fertility Podcast, where we explore the minds of experts from all different walks of life. Our aim is to make your fertility journey just that little bit easier. I'm Ed Coates. I'm a consultant gynecologist. I'm a fertility specialist and co-founder of the website totalfertility.co.uk, where we connect you to all kinds of helpful resources that will hopefully empower you, educate you, inform you, and help you on the road to finding your own fertility. Now, the focus of today's episode is male fertility and all we need to know. The reason for focusing on male fertility is because it's often under-talked about, as we've said before. And following on from the Tokyo Olympics, many of us will probably feel inspired to be doing a little bit more with our own lives in terms of health, well-being, and perhaps sports and exercise. I certainly was impressed by the number of sports on display during the Olympics, sports I'd never even considered or would have tried myself, but there'll be many people approaching fertility who do undertake a number of these sports. So understanding what's good for you and what's not good for you, particularly as a man, and male fertility, as we've already said, is a really important problem that is not often talked about, and therefore understanding how sports and exercise fits into that, I think, is a really important subject to address. So we're very lucky to be joined by two guests today, and the first is an Olympian. Steve Parry is from Liverpool. He's from the Northwest, a household name probably in the Northwest, but a well-known ambassador of British swimming and an Olympic medal winner. Steve actually won 200 metre bronze in the butterfly in Athens, and I remember watching that years ago. Now, Steve is superhuman in a swimming pool and has gone on to do incredible things in terms of grassroots swimming and educating children and trying to get people out doing sport. But Steve also, as a superhuman swimmer, had his own health concerns, and he's going to share a very personal story with us. And I think it really, for me, focuses the mind around the real difficulty that we have as men. We don't often think that fertility is ever going to be an issue for us. And that is something which I think is really very neatly summed up by Steve's story. So, Steve Parry, over to you.
So I just wanted to spend a few minutes talking about something that is very, very personal in my life. And also I don't speak about very often. I don't think socially it's something that ever comes up. But I was very lucky. I spent about 15 years of my life training to be an Olympian. My profession was wearing those little budgie smugglers and prancing around in trunks all day, training about 7 kilometres swimming a day and lifting a lot of weights. And naturally, I ended up feeling that I was superhuman, especially when I won a medal in the Olympics in 2004. But I want to tell you about a time in my life. It was all happening 2009. I'd just getting married to my beautiful wife, Thea. And we had the most amazing wedding. And then I went away on our honeymoon, and I just started to get a real ache in my testicle, and lots of people make jokes about honeymoon and aching and all that stuff, but I knew that it didn't feel quite right. So anyway, when I got back, my wife and I, we had a really high awareness around health, because unfortunately 3 years before, my wife's sister Maxine, she was diagnosed with cancer and died within 3 months. So we health was really high on our agenda. Anyway, I didn't think that there was anything wrong, and with this swimming background and being extremely healthy, yeah, I just thought it'd be really simple. But I went to the hospital, and I just thought they were going to check me out, and that was it. I'll be in and out in 5 minutes. But there was a bit of a surreal moment when I was laying down on the on this bed being examined, and the fella just looked a bit worried. And I'm a confident guy. I'd stop pestering, but I'd just tell me. He said, "Your doctor will tell you." I said, "Just tell me what's going on." He said, "Well, you got a tumor in your right testicle." And I had tumour and knew that it was cancer. And with this backstory, you know, you start to think all sorts of horrible things, don't you? So freaked me out, freaked my wife out even more. I didn't know at that time that testicular cancer, the survival rates were 96, 97%. And it was relatively straightforward from there. But anyway, part of the procedure was to get my testicle removed, my right one. And yeah, that was a bit weird as well. You know, to being being a proud male and then not having kids at the time. You know, it's very scary to have to go through that process. And it all happened really rather quickly. And one thing that I didn't consider was fertility. So it sounds bizarre, right? I was about to get a testicle removed. And I hadn't considered that freezing sperm might be a good idea. Yeah, I was desperate to have family, always wanted kids. And I can't even reconcile it now, but it didn't cross my mind at the time to do. Anyway, fortunately, a week before, one of the doctors said to me, have you addressed the fertility issue? And in quite a comedy moment, the morning before the operation of getting my testicle removed, I had to fly round fertility clinics trying to give a sample. I actually managed to get into a clinic at 8:31 when it opened, did a sperm donation and was in the hospital for 10 before they removed my testicle. So I'm laughing about it now. But the point is, these things, they need some planning. And you know, we plan all sorts of stuff in life, buying a house, buying a car, what clothes we're going to wear, but we probably don't give that much thought to as much thought as to planning, our families. And I, you know, I just want to share, I never really share, but I went through an incredibly, scary time. And especially so with my wife and her experience. And kids are the most important thing in my life. I've got four kids that range from 8 to 1 years of age. I probably need to stop having children now, but I just love them. And the best moment of my life is hearing them laugh and the family holidays that we go on and stuff. So for those people that are considering starting a family and planning their fertility, it's nothing to be embarrassed about or nervous about. And any organization that helps people plan their fertility, I'm totally supportive of. So I just wanted to say, you know, to everyone, look after your own health, but especially to men in this circumstance, because that's my experience. Don't be embarrassed to check yourself. Look after your health and ensure that, you know, you are planning your fertility. Thank you for listening for a few minutes, and best wishes to you and your families.
So yeah, that story is incredible, really. I mean, it's important in fertility for all of us, but I think men particularly are often quite bad at not always talking about it. And we're really lucky to have with us another Liverpudlian. We've actually got one of the world's leading experts in fertility, Professor Charles Kingsland. Charles, welcome to the podcast. What a story.
Great. Yeah, really traumatic story with a happy ending, and that he's made Steve has made some really important points there. It takes me back. You know, I've been doing this been in this business for 30 years now, Ed, and I remember attending fertility clinics as a trainee, and the vast majority of clinics were in the gynecology department, and women were expected to attend on their own, and we always associated fertility and loss of fertility as a problem associated with women. And to some extent that's still the case. Fortunately, nowadays we do recognize that it's a disorder of couples, and it's unusual for a woman to come to a fertility clinic on her own. But of course, you know, we now recognize that at least 50% of all problems with difficulty conceiving lie with the male. And so one of the first things we do is assess, you know, when a couple come having had difficulty trying to achieve a family, one of the first things we do is assess the male. We do that, as Steve said, with the sperm count. But you're right, you know, we men have been very slow at wanting to talk about it. We're not the world's best communicators, unlike women who tend to be able to find their own support mechanisms far easier than men do. And it's only very recently that we are prepared to talk about these sort of things and seek help. So that story that Steve makes is a good one. It's a good starting point.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly remember growing up, I don't think, you know, you with your mates and, you know, bravado and egos, you don't talk about that sort of stuff. And sometimes it comes quite late on in people's lives when they'd suddenly discover that there is a problem. But I guess for people listening to this as well, some people will be thinking, well, hang on a sec. Okay, so there's lots of things out there. There's lots of information, isn't out there on the web everyone can get now. And some of it's not always accurate. And I suppose that's why wanted to speak to someone like yourself to put some real meat on the bone there in terms of trying to understand for men who may be exploring this for the first time, you know, what is in fact the mechanisms of sperm production? So what's going on sort of biologically and where can things go wrong?
Yeah, the way that I see it is that the difference between boys and girls is that boys are sperm factories. We have all the ingredients in our bodies to make sperm every day of the week. Some days we're good at it, some days we're bad at it. But it takes us about 6 weeks to make a sperm. We don't store sperm for very long. Then we ejaculate them out and make some more. So we can actually reproduce in theory up until the day we die. As we get older, our little factories don't work as well and we get dodgier sperm. So as we get into our fifth decade, into our 40s and 50s, the sperm production goes downhill a bit. But we also lose the ability to deliver sperm. You know, when you reach the age of 50, up to 50% of men have some degree of impotence. That's something else that we don't talk about, but it's very common. You know, we just lose the ability to deliver sperm. Now, that's unlike women. Women are egg warehouses. All a woman's eggs are in their ovaries on the day they're born. And they can't make them. They just sit there until the female enters puberty, 11, 12, 13, and then she starts to release them. Dodgy ones go first, then the best ones. But her eggs get older with her as she matures. And that's why, unlike men, women's fertility actually drops off quite rapidly over the age of 35 and like a stone over the age of 40. So if I see a couple coming into the clinic having had difficulty achieving a pregnancy, the female is 40, there's a 50-50 chance that she's actually hasn't got any eggs. And we tend to forget that. We tend to, age is absolutely critical for the female, which is less so than the for the male. But you know, when you look at the sperm factory, interestingly, we are nowhere near as good as producing sperm than we were 50 years ago. An interesting study was performed in the 1940s in Liverpool by the then professor of gynecology, Professor Arthur Gemmell. And he looked at sperm counts amongst men in Liverpool. And it just so happened that the criteria that he used for assessing sperm was adopted by the World Health Organization in 1970. So we had a direct comparison between the sperm counts of 1940s males and the sperm counts of 1970s males. And believe it or not, Ed, the sperm count was half of what it was in 1940. And it's a well-known fact now that our sperm counts are going down. Now, you say, we don't know whether the fertility of the sperm is going down, but we do know that the counts are going down. There have been some really elegant studies to show why that's the case. So why is it that we're losing our sperm function or sperm numbers? And, you know, it's a combination of things. It's probably diet, it's probably environment. If you look at some of the stuff that gets into the food chain now, nitrogenous fertilizers, broken down to estrogen gets into the water table, we drink it, and our sperm counts go down. So what we do is when a couple come to the clinic, we want to look at three particular parameters in a sperm count. We look at the count, we look at the motility, and we look at the morphology. That's the number of sperm that are normal. Now, interestingly, again, we produce, us humans produce millions and millions of sperm in an ejaculate normally, but not many of them are normal morphology. The majority of our sperm, in fact, the vast majority of our sperm, are morphologically abnormal. In fact, up to 95% of our sperm looks dodgy, but we only need 5% to be normal. And then if you look at the count, we want a count of around about 30, 40 million sperm per mil. That's a lot. That's an awful lot. Now, for a sperm to swim from the vagina after sexual intercourse to the egg, that's the equivalent of a man swimming from Liverpool, the pierhead in Liverpool, to the Statue of Liberty in New York. Yeah, it's a long, long way. These men...
It's quite a swim.
Yeah, that's quite a swim. And these men are swimming at about 600 miles an hour. So if you're going to, if you've got 40 million men that are jumping into the River Mersey, you want them to be doing front crawl towards the New Brighton Lighthouse. You don't want them to be doing doggy paddle towards Birkenhead or backstroke towards the Runcorn Bridge. They need to be motoring. So we look at the count, how many are doing front crawl, and how many are swimming in the direction of New York, because we want one to crawl up the Statue of Liberty at the end to get into the egg. That's why we have loads of sperm swimming as quickly and as positive as they can. Now, to maintain as many sperm as we possibly can, it's important to maintain your testicular health. And this is what Steve was talking about. You need to... Sperm factories are outside the body. Ovaries are inside the body. Eggs like to be kept nice and warm within the ovary. Sperm like to be kept cool. That's why testicles hang outside the body and why ovaries are inside the body. So if we treat sperm as, I don't know, little animals, and you know, when Anton van Leeuwenhoek was a Dutch microscopist, he was the first person to discover sperm. And he was looking down his microscope one day, and he happened upon these little wriggly things. What he was doing 10 minutes before looking down his microscope, I don't know, but he was looking at these little wriggly things, and he coined the term animalcules. And these little sperm he called little animals. And he then made the assumption that they were deposited in females and grew into the baby. This was long before genetics, but he thought that these little sperm found a nest inside the female and then grew into the baby. Obviously, that's not the case, but that's what he thought. But it's actually quite a useful little analogy to make, that you need to treat them like little pets, little animals. Keep them cool, keep them healthy. Don't feed them rubbish. You know, nowadays we eat such crap. You know, sugary drinks, poor quality food, and that gets into our systems and creates havoc. And it's not difficult. It's actually difficult to eat healthy food all the time, but it's not difficult to have a mantra whereby you can always spoil yourself with the odd, you know, cheap burger, but you should be eating healthily. Keep your testicles healthy, drink healthily.
That, I mean, that brings you nicely to sort of diets and nutrition and what we should be putting into our bodies and what we shouldn't. Is there anything that you absolutely are a no-no and things that you would encourage?
Yeah, one of the things that that makes my heart sink sometimes is when you see a couple coming in to the clinic, they're trying for a baby, female is slim, she's fit and healthy. Guy comes in, he's ripped, he's bursting with muscles, he can hardly get through the door. He's obviously spent a long time in the gym. My heart sinks, because there is one thing that that sperm do not like. If you want to knock your sperm off, take anabolic steroids, take testosterone. Now, you might think, well, in testosterone, the male hormone, that gives us our masculinity and hence our fertility. Well, it's not the case, actually. Testicles produce testosterone, which makes us male and gives us the ability to deliver sperm and makes us hairy and muscly and able to go out and shoot, you know, hunt the wild boar and bring it back to the cave and do all those masculine things. And it gives us the ability to deliver sperm. But actually, testosterone lowers your sperm count. It lowers your sperm count. So if you take anabolic steroids, the chances are you've damaged your sperm. And once you've damaged your sperm, it takes quite some time to come back. And a lot of men will recognize if they do take testosterone to as performance enhancing drugs, their testicles will go smaller. So as a rule of thumb, you want reasonably sized testicles. It's not the that's the important thing.
Yeah. And I mean, so post the Olympics, I mean, I'm sure like you watching the Olympics, I've been in awe of what they do. And there's Steve's story, superhuman, had testicular cancer. And as you say, nice end to the story. But I guess a lot of people listen to this, we think, well, what is the right, I mean, that's a really important thing that you've just brought up there, because some men will, as you say, be pumping iron in the gym and be feeling really strong and really fit, but actually be doing damage to their testes. So in terms of sports and exercise and our hormones, is there any sort of advice there you've got for people? Because there's so many, I mean, you must get these questions all the time as I do, but what would you sort of, how do you tackle sort of what's the right level? How do you balance it?
So what I would say is try and avoid anabolic steroids. Well, absolutely avoid them. Try and avoid protein enhancing drinks and shakes, because although they might claim to be testosterone free, often a little bit of contaminant will get in there, which has got a testosterone like substance. So generally, protein drinks are not good for you. Now, when it comes to exercise, we all like to be fit. We all like to go down the gym and look good, and not only look good, but feel good. But there is a limit. You can be too fit. And normally what I say, Ed, and I don't know what parameters you have, it's very difficult to quantify or qualify your exercise. But I say, if you're exercising the equivalent of running 15 or more miles a week, you're doing too much. Similarly, if you're on a bike, just imagine what your little animals are doing in your testicles. If you're cycling on a bicycle for, you know, hours and hours a day, walking around, you know, squashing your testicles on a bicycle seat continuously is not good. In fact, there was another trial done a few years ago looking at jobs and fertility counts. It was quite an interesting one. And if you look at men who have active outside jobs tend to have the better sperm count. So you look at gardeners, postmen, the jobs where men can let their testicles hang free, builders, good sperm counts generally. Of course, this is generalization. Lower sperm counts, taxi drivers, bus drivers, lorry drivers, people who are stressed out, doctors. I suppose not only are we stressed out, Ed, but we probably drink too much alcohol, which is also not good for sperm. A bit of alcohol is good for everybody, but too much alcohol, like anything in excess, is not good. So I'm not suggesting that stress is, is a be all and end all, because it's always nice for us to have a little bit of stress, but we don't want too much stress, because that can affect not only our sperm counts, but it can affect our performance. Because if you're not feeling like delivering sperm, as many men can do, it's a common problem. I hear it, you know, daily. Men, again, who are a bit reluctant, and once you gain their confidence or trust and you chat through, a lot of men just say, look, I just have difficulty maintaining an erection. I have difficulty ejaculating. I've seen couples who come to see me have not been able to have sex for 10 years, and it's taken them that long to come along. So those sort of things, you've got to have. Another thing that is I seem to be collecting all these facts on sexual intercourse, don't I? Sorry about that, but it is part of my job.
It's the occupation, I'm afraid,
it's
Charles.
It's the occupation, yeah. Well, if you know, Roy Homburg, Professor Roy Homburg, gives a fascinating talk on sex and fertility. And we're having sex far less than we were 30 years ago. In fact, he claims that the average 35-year-old female is only having sexual intercourse once every 6 weeks, which is not an awful lot. The Japanese have sex even less. We talk about it a lot, but we don't do it a lot. So people will say, you know, do you have sex regularly? Well, to be having a reasonable chance of conceiving, and to have a reasonable chance of maintaining your sexual health, and this is a bit of info for the men who are listening, you need to be having sex twice a week. And to maintain a good sperm count, you need to be cleaning out the pipes once or twice a week, every 5 or 6 days. So you can always use that as an excuse, look, darling, and we need to have sexual intercourse, because Professor Kings has told me I need my pipes clearing out every 5 or 6 days, which is because if you ejaculate every 6 weeks, you'll ejaculate high numbers of grandpa sperm who may just not be able to make the journey. If you ejaculate every 1 or 2 days, you'll probably ejaculate baby sperm. So the best sperm count, we would say, is usually about 4 or 5 days old. That will give you the best number of Olympic athletes. What I normally say to men as well, which I think is quite a useful analogy, is we'll do a sperm count and we'll look for the count, 40 million per mil, 40% doing front crawl, 5% normal, which is a nice sperm count. I'll say, well, look, do you follow football? And usually up here in the Northwest, the answer is yeah. And I'll say, well, you know, you're Leicester City or you're Crystal Palace. They go, oh, what, Crystal Palace? I say, yeah, but you won't go down. You may not get into Europe, but you're not getting relegated. And so that's a good place. Or Everton, that's a good place to be. You know, you can say at the beginning of the season, Everton might not, they won't get into Europe, but they're not going to get relegated. So, and then, of course, you get the occasional Liverpool and Man City, and which is great because we all have different fertilities. Some of us have great fertility. Some of us have poor fertility. Most of us have average fertility. So if you're if you're a high fertility male and a high fertility female, you'll click just like that. And they're the sort of people who will at parties will be saying, oh, I only have to look at David and I seem to get pregnant, that sort of. And then you've got a poor fertility male and a poor fertility female, and they'll take much longer. And they're the sort of people who will say, look, we never thought we'd ever get pregnant. Then along came Billy. Most of us are in the middle, and we're, you know, six, nine months. Yeah.
So men listening to this then who are thinking now, well, gosh, am I swimmers medal winners, or am I actually, am I doing doggy paddle, as you say? How do they start? What should they do? And how do they begin if they don't get a sort of gold medal winning sperm result that they want? How do they begin to sort of boost things?
So if a couple have been trying for 6, 9 months, a year, depending on the female's age. We always say, well, infertility may be significant if you've been trying for a year and you haven't been able to conceive. Sometimes that, you know, that's a generalization. Again, you know, if the female is 38, 39, she may not want to wait that long. Or similarly, if the male is 45, 46, his sperm is no longer, we can no longer assume it's Olympian standard, then seek advice early. And the easiest thing to do, Ed, is to just get a sperm test. Now, if you want to optimize your sperm without, you know, just by way of just trying to keep things ticking along, keep your testicles cool, boxer shorts, as opposed to tight budgie smugglers like Steve Parry was talking about. Avoid hot baths. Hot baths will kill off your sperm.
Yeah.
So cool showers. Eat healthily. If you want to supplement your diet, take a bit of zinc. zinc is good for your sperm. You don't need to take lots of elaborate vitamins and minerals and well man and superman and all those sort of things. You don't need it. If you've got a good diet, that's all you need. And ejaculate regularly. But the other important thing that that Steve alluded to is just examine your testicles once a week. Just feel, just make sure they feel okay. That, you know, they're firm. They're not lumpy. There are no lumps or bumps on them. And you get the best person to examine your testicles is yourself or your partner, because they will know that your testicles feel, and they will be able to pick up how they change. So check your health, eat well, keep them cool, keep your animals, those animals in your little testicular cages healthy. Don't feed them rubbish.
Yeah, I think that's a really good advice for anybody that's listening to this, Charles, because I think it is a difficult subject for men. And I think actually we are, as you said right at the very start there, we're still, I think, beginning to get more confident about talking about this as a male group. And therefore, this advice, I think, is just so important. And don't feel embarrassed about it, because I mean, self-examination, as Steve said, you know, it saved his life, actually. And he's been very lucky and gone on and had fertility. And you obviously are involved with one of the biggest groups in the UK, fertility. It's Care Fertility, isn't it? And there are lots of clinics that people could come to undertake these tests and diagnostics if they want to.
That's right. And it costs £85, £100 in your clinics as well, Ed, as well as Care Fertility. Just pick up the phone and say, I want a fertility assessment. £85 puts your mind at rest. And, you know, infertility, as Steve said, it's a stressful business. You know, you talk, people say, oh, well, it's not the be all and end of the world. It's not cancer. It's not, but it's very stressful. If you think about what disease means, what is a disease? I tell my medical students, well, you know, you're a doctor. What's a disease? You're trained to be a doctor. What do you understand by the word disease? Well, a disease is something that puts you abnormally at ease, dis-ease, abnormality of easiness. Now, the one thing that you notice about couples who are wanting a child and can't have one is that they are ill at ease. They are diseased and they want information. And so don't just sit there and worry. Pick up the phone. Speak to a fertility clinic. As I said, you know, Care Fertility, we've got 21 clinics across Britain. We've got central telephone lines. If you're worried, pick the phone up. If you've been on steroids or you've heard this, you think, oh crikey, what have I done to myself? Just have a check. Dead easy. And if you can't, you know, if you don't know how to examine your testicles, then just go and see your doctor and just say, look, I want you to demonstrate to me how I can examine my own testicles. In the same way as women will want to examine their own breasts. The best person to examine your breasts is yourself. Learn how to do it. And then you know the changes that you will notice. And if you do have abnormalities and you pick them up early, it's amazing the cure rates. It's when you leave it or you don't notice it. That's when the problems arise. So get stuff done early. And same as fertility. If you're 38, 37, 38, and you've met the man of your dreams, then, and you want babies, don't hang around. If you're having difficulty, get advice if you can't conceive.
Thanks so much, Charles. That's wonderful advice. And I think anyone listening to this will hopefully be inspired to get on and not leave things to chance. So thanks so much for coming and joining us on the podcast. It's been fantastic chatting to you.
It's a pleasure, Ed. Pleasure.
Well, I thought that was a really, really nice overview of male fertility. Some of the real basics that you need to know and think about with regard to your own fertility. Steve's story at the very beginning there had so much in it in terms of showing just how suddenly fertility can become an issue for people. And many people listening to this may have just found out for the very first time that there is an issue and will be wanting to know what they can do. Steve's story, of course, had a happy ending, but it just shows going to the gym, pumping iron, being as fit as you like, there can still be underlying issues. So be aware of your fertility. And as Steve said, don't be ashamed to check your fertility. It does require a little bit of planning. Charles's advice, fantastic. A lovely overview. And I did love the anecdotal stories there of swimming the Mersey, crossing the Atlantic to the Statue of Liberty is a good description of how hard sperm have to work to fertilize eggs. Really, really nice, simple way to understand what's going on. And I think these sorts of things are really important when we're trying to actually understand what we're trying to do to try and improve the quality of our sperm and overall turn our swimmers into medal winners ultimately. So fantastic episode from, and thank you for the contribution from both the guys, from both Professor Charles Kingsland and Steve Parry. If you want to find out more about obviously both of these two wonderful people, please do look at the show notes. There's some links there that you can follow. And of course, please join us next time when we'll be continuing in the theme of sports, exercise, and hormones.